This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Chris Waddell is competing in the Paralympics, the International Olympics for Disabled Athletes, which are underway in Salt Lake City. On Sunday, he won a silver medal for skiing to add to the 5 Paralympic gold medals he's already won for skiing and wheelchair racing. He's competing again today and tomorrow. Waddell lost the use of his legs in 1988 after breaking his back in a ski accident. When he returned to the slopes, it was on a monoski. I spoke with him Monday and asked him to describe the monoski he's using in the Paralympics.
The shock absorber is probably the most important part of the whole thing. And it's a frame that's kind of almost like taking a motorcycle frame without the wheels and without the handlebars. So you sit on this frame about 18 inches off the ground, and my feet are extended in front of me, my knees are bent, and I have outriggers in my arms, in my hands, little like crutches with skis on the bottom. And the great part about it is that if I do things well from the waist up, it basically, the ski does what it's designed to do.
And if not?
If not, I'm not making a very good turn.
Right. Now, you mentioned the shock absorber. How does the shock absorber work? Is it like the shock absorber on a car?
It's exactly the same as a shock absorber on a car. It's actually a motorcycle shock absorber. And the thing is that for a regular able-bodied person skiing, you have your knees, hips, and ankles to absorb the bumps and the various terrain and stuff like that out there. I don't. If I were skiing without a shock absorber on my monoski, it would be, you know, if it were completely solid, it would be a miserably difficult ride. And I've been really lucky. The company that I'm with, Yeti Monoskis, has been working closely with Penske, and that's one of the things that we can continue to improve is the shock and the ability to keep the ski on the snow. And if we're able to do that, then we're able to take advantage of the technology of the actual snow ski.
Now, are you strapped in to the ski?
Oh, yes. Strapped in, buckled in. I have a cover that covers my legs, so it adds to the aerodynamic, makes it more aerodynamic. And I'm strapped in. I'm at one with the ski. The binding is a regular ski binding that we click into, but it's also pinned with a cotter pin so that it won't release. So I'm with the ski 100% of the time. If I crash, I'm still with the ski. And sometimes that gets a little scary because you're talking about 35 pounds of additional weight. But I don't want to lose the ski. It would be really ugly if I lost the ski, and things would get really, really ugly.
Now, you're seated on one ski. Why not two skis?
One ski is, I mean, there's some people out there who do buy skis. Most of the buy skis right now are for higher level injuries, higher level paraplegics and quadriplegics, people who don't have as much balance. The one ski for the monoski is just more performance oriented at that point. Right now, one ski just enables us to make a better turn than two skis do. And maybe that'll change in the future, but at this juncture in time, that's the best thing we have going.
How fast can you go?
I did not hear if they had a speed trap at the bottom of the downhill, but one of the guys who was organizing the race was telling me that he was guessing we were going about 70 miles an hour at the bottom there. So it's pretty quick.
Compare that to the speed of a skier who's skiing on their legs.
Well, it depends on which skiers you're comparing that to.
Well, in the Olympics.
If you're talking, yeah. Right. The Olympic, we're finishing at the women's downhill. It's the women's downhill finish, so it's the same pitch. I think they were going close to like 80 to 85. So we were, 10 to 15 miles an hour slower than they were.
Mm-hmm. Still pretty darn fast.
Yeah. Well, fast enough to get your attention.
And now, how do you keep your balance and control your center of gravity on the monoski?
The monoski, what's interesting about it is it's like riding a bicycle, where when you first start out, it's really difficult to find the balance. And especially when you're going slowly, it seems like you're never going to find your balance because, I don't know, it's the same thing on a bicycle, where if you're trying to go slowly on a bicycle, it's much more difficult to balance. Once you get going, you find that balance point, and once you've found it, it seems like you're not going to lose it. And so it's really similar to riding a bicycle in that it's pretty easy once you find the balance point.
You first started skiing when you were a child. How old were you?
Right. I was about 3 years old when I first started skiing.
And you were how old when you had your accident?
I was 20 at the time of my accident.
Mm-hmm. So you started skiing when you were about 3. You had your accident when you were about 20. So you were already skiing a lot by then. What are the biggest differences for you between skiing on the monoski and skiing on your legs like you used to do before the accident.
Right. What was interesting is when I first started skiing again in a monoski, it was difficult to learn because I was such a young kid when I first started skiing that I don't remember learning how to ski the first time. And I had always kind of taken it for granted. It was something that I did all the time, you know, every day, you know, 100 days a year or something like that. And so learning to ski again was certainly difficult. What's different is I have one ski. I don't have the ability to step from one foot to the other. I don't have as much of an ability to make a lateral move, you know, so a sideways move to try to gain a little bit of distance, I guess. So to help me get back online, I guess is what I'm saying. So it's much more difficult in some respects that you've got to follow the ski around. You've got to make the ski go through the turn and into the next turn, and so there's not as much of a it's not as much room for error. There's not as much of an opportunity to kind of cheat. You kind of have to figure out where you're going to go and what you're going to do and stick with that line.
How do you stop?
Same way that anybody else would. You just get the ski across the hill, edge a little bit to slow down and stop. It's amazingly similar, and there are times where I've completely forgotten that I'm skiing in a monoski.
Right. I guess what I find most difficult to understand about the sport that you compete in now, and this is, I'll preface this by saying I'm a physical coward.
Okay.
But I think if I took a bad fall and broke my back, that I'd devote the rest of my life to like trying desperately to preserve the movement that I had
what
left.
What you had?
Yeah. And the last thing in the world I would do would be to ski downhill at 70 miles an hour and risk breaking an arm, you know, or anything like that. And obviously, you don't feel that way.
Well, that's actually a really interesting thing that I think a lot of people look at and say, I wouldn't risk this. I wouldn't try. You know, you've already injured yourself. Why do you want to risk anything else? And the hard part is that you want to start over again. That a lot of what was taken away from me was the use of my body, was the use of my legs. And I had to reclaim some pride in my body. I had to reclaim who I was to a certain extent. And I had to prove to myself what was possible. And the fact of the matter is, being an athlete, it makes my life a lot easier. It makes my life a lot easier just getting around on a daily basis. And I think that's what happens for a lot of disabled people. I'm lucky that I work closely with one of my sponsors, with the Hartford Financial Services Group. And that's one of the things that I do for them is represent some of the possibilities that are out there, because for people who have had a traumatic injury, the hardest part is getting started. And people always ask me, well, what, you know, how do you do it? How are you able to have achieved what you've achieved? And the answer for me is that I found something that I love to do.
How often do you fall when you're skiing?
How often do I fall? It depends on the day. The big thing is that if I don't fall, I'm not pushing myself. So mm-hmm. In training, I really need to push myself to the point where I am going to fall, where I am going to find that fine line between being in control and being out of control. And if I can find that line, then that's something that I can use when I get into a competition.
Are there any tricks to falling on the monoski without hurting yourself?
Not really, I don't think. I mean, part of it is you are much less likely to get hurt if you're being aggressive, if you're going for it, and if you're relaxed. If you tighten up and you're trying not to fall, that's usually when you get hurt. So being calm and being at ease with the sport, I think oftentimes is makes for good falls.
Right. Have you had any serious injuries since the monoskiing?
I've had a variety of different injuries. I mean, I've, you know, broken my nose and strained my rotator cuff, and I've taken some crashes and had some bumps and bruises. I haven't had anything that's really been serious, and you know, I'm certainly knocking on wood at this point and hoping that I avoid that in the future as well.
Now, over the weekend, you won a silver medal.
Yes.
How many fractions of a second did you miss gold by?
I think I missed gold by 29 hundredths of a second.
See, that's such an unfathomable measure of time. I mean, you can't even say by a nose, because a nose is like much bigger than that amount of time is.
I think it ended up being, at that speed, it was 7.8 meters that I lost by over a course that's about 2 miles long.
Oh, I see. So it's really more than by a nose because you're going so quickly.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we were going about 70 miles an hour at the end of the race there.
Right. So did you feel really, really victorious when you got the silver medal, or were you disappointed that it wasn't gold?
Well, the biggest thing is when I'm competing, I have to look at the competition is between me and myself oftentimes, and between the mountain and me. And really, I felt like I had a good run. I felt like I conquered my fear. I felt like I did what I needed to do. I was disappointed. I felt like I blew one turn close to the end, mm-hmm. and that might very well have been the difference. You're also, when you're competing against other people, you're competing and you're working with the hope of winning. And so, yeah, it's always a little bit disappointing, but the guy who beat me is a great athlete, and I certainly can't take anything away from him. And I put down the best run that I could put down at that point, and that's certainly all I could hope for.
My guest is skier Chris Waddell. He's currently competing in the Paralympics in Salt Lake City. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Chris Waddell is my guest, and he's currently competing in the Paralympics in the skiing events. Can you tell us about the accident in which you got your injury?
I can tell you a little bit about it. I don't remember all of my accident. I broke my back. I was skiing. I was warming up, preparing to train, skiing with some friends at home. And I was testing a new pair of skis. My binding came off prematurely. So I was skiing along. One of my skis popped off. And that's all I remember of the whole thing. I crashed. I don't know what happened after that. The shock made it so that I blacked out, essentially. I was conscious, but I was in shock. And so I don't know what happened. I broke a couple of vertebrae, collarbone, ribs, and stuff like that. And I was kind of in and out for a while as far as what I remember, going to the hospital and then being airlifted to another hospital and stuff like that. But that's what I remember.
Are you grateful you don't remember more?
I think that not remembering, you know, in some ways is a blessing. It probably made it a lot easier to come back to skiing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't, you know, it's not like I have this classic flashback kind of thing. You know,
right, right.
You're thinking, oh no, here we are. I'm in the same position again. I don't remember that. It made it easier to come back to skiing. And maybe in some ways it made it easier to move forward, to progress in my rehabilitation and things like that. It's, at this point in my life, it's not a big deal one way or the other whether I remember or not. Maybe I'll remember. Maybe I'll piece it together. At this point, I don't think I'll remember anymore, and I'm fine with that. I don't need it one way or the other. I don't think.
At what point after the accident did you start thinking very seriously about wanting to ski again?
In the time leading up to my accident, I was preparing for ski season. I raced at Middlebury College at the time of my accident, and I was preparing for the ski season. And I had goals as an able-bodied athlete, and that fed right into my life after my accident. I was never told that I was paralyzed. So as I was lying in my hospital bed, I was planning my return to skiing while I was lying in my hospital bed. I didn't know the extent of my injuries. I didn't know how I was going to be able to move forward, but luckily a couple of opportunities presented themselves. A friend was doing a documentary movie on adaptive skiing, and she asked me if I would be willing to ski in it. My coach at Middlebury, Bart Bradford, had been coaching at Mount Hood and ended up coaching right next to the U.S. disabled team, and came back all excited and through the friends of Middlebury Skiing bought me my first mono ski, which goes between $2,000 and $3,000. So I was lucky that I had a tremendous amount of support, and I was able to get back into skiing really quickly and really easily.
So when did you realize your legs were paralyzed? Is it something you figured out yourself, or did someone actually tell you?
Nobody ever told me. Did I? I think I figured it out, but I think there's also, for me, there was a little bit of the ego of an athlete at that point, where maybe I was paralyzed at that point, and I figured that what applied to other people was not necessarily going to apply to me. And so whether that was the situation at this point or not, I thought that I could overcome it. And that was not necessarily the case, but but I think that got me through some of the hard part, some of the part of looking at this huge traumatic change in my life and being able to say, you know what, I need to start working now, and eventually I will overcome this whole thing. And maybe I didn't overcome it in a literal way, but I think in a pretty figurative way I was able to overcome it by finding ways for me to go forward.
You need incredible upper body strength for the monoskiing that you did. What was your approach to building up your upper body strength after you lost the movement of your legs?
When I got back into skiing, I wanted to be a world-class athlete. I wanted to be the best monoskier in the world. And that was my goal, and I figured that if I was going to try to achieve that goal, I needed to train like the best athlete in the world. So I started racing wheelchairs, which is the best way, one of the best ways I can think of to build up my upper body. And so I started racing wheelchairs, and that was my off-season training that quickly snowballed into being a sport on its own. So I've actually competed in the last two summer games in addition to the last three winter games. I guess this is my fourth winter game. So it really, my off-season training is an off-season sport that prepares me really well for the winter. I'm fit and ready to go by the time November comes around.
Did you work out with weights?
I work out with weights. I'm in the gym. Like this past summer, I was in the gym 5 to 6 days a week usually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think one of the most amazing things about being a disabled athlete like you are, I mean, a lot of people assume when they see somebody, for instance, in a wheelchair, that they must be very weak, that they're a constant need of assistance of some sort. And you're right. Really strong. I mean, you can't use your legs. But, right. You know, the parts of the body you can use are really fit. So it's this kind of paradox for somebody encountering you. You know, part of you doesn't work, but the other part is, you know, really top notch.
Right. Well, see, the fact of the matter is there's certainly, it's not to say that there aren't things that are difficult, because there are difficulties that I encounter every single day. And, you know, it's a matter of, I mean, a flight of stairs is a difficulty. Getting up a curb when I have something on my lap is a difficulty. And so there are a variety of things that certainly are difficult, but they're also, by virtue of being fit, it's a matter of being creative for me. It's a matter of trying to figure out how I can achieve what I want to achieve. And sure, some things are going to take a lot longer. It's difficult for me to put skis in the rooftop box on my car, but I figured out that I can sit on the roof and pull my skis up and put them in the box. And it's a lot easier if I get somebody else to do it, but if the situation calls for it, I can do it myself. And I think that's part of what being an athlete is, and it's part of, you know, getting the most out of life, I guess.
You've competed in and won medals in several Paralympics. When you were a teenager, did you compete with the goal of ultimately getting in the Olympics?
I don't know that it was the goal. It was a dream. And by the time I was a teenager, it wasn't all that realistic a dream. I don't think I was not going to compete in the Olympics. That is one of the things that really, in a lot of ways, is a paradox for me, because I've risen to a much higher level after a traumatic injury, which I think probably wouldn't make sense to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, it was a dream as a kid to be in the Olympics. It was never a realistic dream. Luckily, now I can say that I've been in. And this is my sixth Paralympic Games, and I can say that on a few days I've been the best in the world, and I never ever could have said that prior to my injury. So it's a very strange twist of fate.
Now, you said that you don't think you're going to be an athlete all your life. Do you feel that there's a certain limit, like there's a certain age that you'll reach, and then you'll have to decide that's it?
Well, it's all an individual thing. I think there are people who certainly have been successful throughout their 30s into their 40s, and it's a matter of what you determine you want to do. I've been an athlete for a long time in my life, and I think there comes a point when you decide that even if you can continue to be successful, there are other things that you want to pursue, and I think that I will come to that point at some point, and I haven't decided exactly when that'll be.
What do you think you would do afterwards?
That's a tough question.
Mm-hmm.
That's in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm kind of approaching the end of my athletic career, and I feel like a college senior at this point. And people are asking me, what am I going to do? And I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. I don't have a firm plan of what I'm going to do. And part of it is that I think there are a lot of possibilities out there, and I want to continue to pursue some of those things. I've done a fair amount of speaking, motivational type speaking, and I'm sure that's something that I would continue to do in the future. That's something I very much enjoy. And I think that'll be, I don't know if that'll be all of what I do, but it'll be a component. I've done some television work. I've been on camera doing some television work. I'd certainly love to continue to do that. And a lot of it depends on what the opportunities are that present themselves.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it.
Chris Waddell is competing in the Paralympics in Salt Lake City. He won a silver medal on Sunday. Our interview was recorded on Monday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.